Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Jeff Brantley, are we inclined to believe that there is any form of good news for the Rockies, as suggested in the update just delivered a few seconds ago?
I don't think so. No.
I don't think for the moment there is. There is the essential reality. I'll tell you what this eight-game losing streak does, at the very least. And I don't think it does anything to damage our overall forecast of the Rockies, which prior to the start of the season, I had at roughly 86 to 88 wins. I'd say you could probably go two or three games on either side of that range, and I wouldn't have been shocked. If you look at the first half numbers, and we're exactly at the halfway point of the season for the Rockies at 47 and 34, obviously, that would project to 94 wins, but you have to take the last eight games into some account. It's not defining, but here's what it does. In what is undoubtedly the strongest division in baseball, at least 1 through 3, if not 1 through 5. I think the American League East, probably 1 through 5, is a little bit stronger, for example, than the National League West would be 1 through 5. But certainly 1 through 3, when you have three teams in one division, all on a pace to win well over 90 games, and a couple of them on pace to win right around 100, maybe even more than 100, you're in the most competitive division in baseball, at the upper end anyway. So I'm not so much disturbed at the losing streak from the standpoint that it significantly damages or compromises Colorado's playoff hopes, the Rockies' chances of capturing at least the second of two wildcard spots available in the National League, as well as the American League, of course. But what it has done is taken the Rockies out of much of any chance to win the National League West, something they have never done before. And we mentioned earlier this year when they had a winning month of April followed by a winning month of May, that was something they had never done. And maybe it augured well for their prospects to do something else they had never done before, and that's win the National League West. As a prominent former communication director of the Rockies once said, "Tain't happening." According to FanGraphs, the Rockies have now officially dipped below 1% in the chances of winning the National League West. Evans likes that. I get the thumbs up from Evans across the way on the other side of the glass on that reference. We'll get a Dan O'Dowd reference. Not only a Dan O'Dowd reference in, at some point today, we'll sprinkle in portions of the conversation that Schlereth and Evans had with the former Rockies general manager, now a commentator analyst for the MLB Network. We'll drop those in along the way. Dr. Rick Perea, in times of stress and despair, we call him the good doctor, and he'll be in studio during this 10 o'clock hour with us. Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, will also talk some Rockies as one of the smart baseball people we have in local media. 11:15, and Cecil Amy, our fan Bronco insider, at 11:45. But their chances, according to FanGraphs, of winning the National League West are now pegged at 0.8%. This is FanGraphs. 69.9% of the time they qualify for a playoff spot via the wildcard route, according to FanGraphs. So the overall percentage at 70.7 is still fairly favorable, unless you go back roughly a week to 10 days when their chances of making the playoffs were well north of 90%. So their playoff chances have taken a hit too. But I think this eight-game losing streak basically takes you out of any chance to win the division, and I don't know that this is any consolation, but in seven of their last 10 years, the Rockies have had a losing streak this long or longer. The only 3 years that involve losing streaks not quite as long as this one, as their longest losing streaks, were, strangely enough, last year and 2013. Last year they lost six straight. That was their longest losing streak. In 2013, it was five straight. 2009, the last time the Rockies made the playoffs, their longest losing streak was five, even though an 18-28 start resulted in the firing of Clint Hurdle and the promotion of Jim Tracy to the managerial ranks. And the Rockies took off from there and won 74 and lost 42 for the remainder of the season after the firing of Hurdle. But in the storied year of 2007, at exactly this time, you may remember coming off of a sweep of the Yankees at Coors Field, the Rockies went on the road and they lost eight straight games. And six of these eight straight losses have come on the road. The latest yesterday, when the Rockies fielded, I think, as close to a AAA lineup as you'll likely see them field this year. Hopefully it's as weak a lineup as you'll see them field, with three subs. And, of course, Desmond, although he had two hits, not hitting with any power. Story's back around 220 with his batting average. They've been terrible this year in terms of getting on base and particularly driving in runs. With Story's had some home runs, but otherwise hasn't hit for power. Desmond really hasn't hit for power and has been something between a minor and major disappointment. So you had basically five All-American outs in the lineup yesterday, and it showed a two-run single by Arenado in the first inning, and then the offense dried up again. And we come back to the point that you certainly can cite, what is it, the 10.22 ERA from the starters during this eight-game losing streak, and highlight that as the reason that the Rockies have lost their last eight games after recently winning seven in a row. This is kind of a different pattern for the Rockies this month: losing streaks, winning streaks, couple of losing streaks of three games, and then an eight-game losing streak and a seven-game winning streak mixed in. It will be a winning month, but it started 14-4, and now it's 14-12. They have one more game this month, obviously, on Friday night with John Gray pitching. So the National League West title hopes have been dashed by this eight-game losing streak for all intents and purposes, and even 94 wins might not get them past Arizona, much less the Dodgers, in the National League West. There is some good news. We'll outline it briefly before we get to Rick Parrilla. Most everybody lost in the wild card chase last night in the National League for that final wild card spot. So the Rockies are still 6.5 ahead of the Cubs, 8 ahead of the Braves, 9.5 up on Pittsburgh and Miami, and 10 games ahead of the Mets. The Cubs seem to be in a significant tailspin. Well, that's an overstatement. Not so much a tailspin. They're just caught in quicksand now. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. So are the Cardinals. So are the Marlins. So are the Pirates. So are the Mets. Other than the Braves, no one behind Colorado in the wild card race is really doing very much. And the Braves have won 7 out of 10. Of course, the Rockies have lost 8 out of their last 10, so they've lost ground to all those teams. But it's still, at the halfway mark of the season, a pretty good playoff cushion to have. But again, the disappointment comes through the fact that a losing streak like this takes them out of a division as strong as the National League West, almost certainly takes them out at the midpoint season, a race that they had a reasonably decent chance of winning, it seemed, as of 10 days, 2 weeks ago, to be sure, coming out of that seven-game winning streak. Sandy Clef with you. Dr. Rick Parrilla in studio coming next. We'll be right back. Dr. Rick Perea, a frequent in-studio guest with us over the past 4.5 years, is an organization and sports psychologist. We'll talk more about DK2, motivation and performance, a little bit later on. A very busy off-season for you. But naturally, we're talking about, I think, what most sports fans in the area are discussing this morning around the water cooler, and that's the plight of the Rockies. And I was fascinated by your observation made, I think, over a month ago when you were last here in studio with us, that for all of the good feeling surrounding the Rockies' fast start, you had some questions about how they would hold up during the inevitable periods in any baseball season, even with good teams, where things seem to be going against you day after day, and you wondered whether they could cope with those rough patches. This definitely, an 8-game losing streak in progress right now, constitutes a rough patch.
Yes, very much so. I back then when you asked me, Sandy, I was basing it on my experience with specifically the Rockies in Major League Baseball.
As recently as last year.
Yeah. And, you know, for the listeners out there, I worked with the team team-wide, and I still work with specific players. I just have much more limited time this year. But I'm very privy to the team in terms of personnel, the organization, if you will, and I love many levels of the organization. But, you know, one of the things I always ask people when I work with a team is about the leadership on the team, yeah. The players, coaches, where is the leadership? How is it deployed? Are the right players encouraged to be leaders? Is there any kind of leadership development program within the organization? You know, I've often said on the airways, Sandy, that athletic teams are very similar to businesses and organizations. They want to beat their competition, and they want to be the best they can be. And unfortunately, professional athletic teams oftentimes don't know what they don't know. And I found this, you know, in working with corporations like Google and Apple, they strive to know what they don't know. They're open to knowing what they don't know. In fact, that's their modus operandi. What don't we know, and how can we get better? Where you look in professional sports, oftentimes their operandi is more like, I've been doing this 20 years. I've been doing this 30 years. I've been playing in the major leagues the next number of years. This is how we do it. It would benefit Major League Baseball, NFL, and the NBA greatly if they would plug into the research and evidence-based protocols that we have in organizational performance. Because just like Google and Apple have ongoing leadership development, very few Major League Baseball teams have ongoing leadership development within their team. Because I can tell you this, aside from these guys being baseball players, they're human beings. Okay, they are human beings who have emotions, feelings, and perceptions. And if we don't nurture those and cultivate them, they will not be the best they can be on the field.
The three guys who have been consistently productive for the Rockies all year, and you would think of as a result of three of the leaders on the team, Arenado, Blackman, and Reynolds, saying something to me during the break that I thought was interesting from your time around the team last year. You think of those three, Reynolds exhibits maybe the greatest and most prominent leadership qualities, though being relatively new to the team as opposed to Arenado and Blackman, he doesn't necessarily feel comfortable exercising those qualities, putting them into practice.
Correct. Yeah, Mark Reynolds is a player who has a lot of insight. He's played many years in the major leagues, and he's been very productive with several teams. And he has insight that is very valuable to a team that can keep a team on a very high level of performance consistently. Now, is that cultivated within the organization? Is it encouraged within the organization? I can tell you this, that one of the jobs that people like in my position do is we help teams identify who their leaders are, verbally, non-verbally, vocally, because sometimes there's a diamond in the rough. Tony Walter's on this team. In the future, should be called upon as a leader. He's a great communicator. He's a great people person. But again, unless an organization cultivates it and develops it, and in the case of Mark Reynolds, it's like a hidden diamond there's so much insight there. There's so much, so many positive things that he can add. Like, hey guys, you know what? This is going to happen over a 160-game season. This
he basically said that the other day. He said, you know, we didn't complain when we were getting all the breaks in April, May, and the first half of June.
Right.
And now those same breaks are going the other way, and we've got to ride it out. And I thought that was a smart thing from a psychological perspective. As a novice observer on the psychological front, I thought that was a smart thing for him to say.
Yeah.
Not that they've broken out of the losing streak since he said it, but I thought it was a smart thing to say.
Well, and here's the key, Sandy. He has to be given the green light from the people above that, hey, you know what? We need that leadership. We need that voice in the clubhouse. We need that aspect to give us that social and task cohesion. Because if this team... You know, and I'd love for nothing better for this team to be successful because I have a pony in the race. But I want them to understand all the leadership protocols that are necessary to get there. And Mark Reynolds, I think, plays a role here just because of his insight and his ability to communicate and say, hey, this is going to happen, and it may happen longer than sooner, but be open to it. Be open to us developing and cultivating a culture of leaning on some of us more than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll come back and we'll talk about this concept of leadership, but something else you've mentioned that's equally important, and that's followership.
Yes.
And we'll get into some of those issues next with Dr. Rick Perea on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I want to take a couple of points made on the Total Beverage text line and get Dr. Rick Perea's reaction as we continue at 10:30 on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. This Rick from Mike and Henderson, I realize that I have actually been on the bandwagon and drinking the Kool-Aid since the Rockies' inception. Right now I'm just hating the music being played and the flavor of the Kool-Aid. It seems to me the slump started as soon as the pressure and importance of the game started to amp up. I fear the pressure has gotten to this young team. Now they're gripping a little too tight. Now would be the time we would need Cargo to step up and be a veteran leader. Of course, Cargo is hurt at the moment, and he's scuffling himself. What about that statement from Mike and Henderson, though, about the external pressure being absorbed by guys who aren't familiar with the pressures of a division race or a playoff race?
Yes. First of all, I'd say Mike has a lot of insight. It's very accurate. It's very perceptive, very analytical. I think he's right on the money. You know, people talk about the neck down in professional athletics, you know, talent, how good you are physically. And, of course, these guys have to be great hitters and fielders and all that. But from the neck up, Sandy, that's really what carries you over a duration of time at a performance level. I mean, the body just doesn't propel itself. And how you prepare every day mentally will really influence how you perform physically. And not enough people know that. Again, a lot of these people don't know what they don't know. And that's not a bad thing. But again, raise your hand and ask for help. So there are players on this team that haven't been through that pressure situation. And when Mike says they're gripping it a little tighter,
Cargo has.
He's right on
the money. I guess Desmond has a little bit. With other teams in other years. And you've got Holland, former Kansas City Royal, who was involved at least in 2014, significantly involved in their trip to the World Series.
Right.
But that's three guys on an entire roster who have experienced this at all, and one of the three is a closer who on this eight-game losing streak hardly appears at all.
Yeah. Well, see, one of the things you brought up the term followership a few minutes ago. One of the things that we have to understand within leadership is if followers do not consent or drink the Kool-Aid of the leader, that leadership has no value or meaning. So when we mention Cargo as a leader, he is a tremendous leader through example, and he's becoming a better leader verbally and vocally. And that's something in my work with him I've encouraged him to do, to develop that, because he is a guy that the players will drink his Kool-Aid. There's no doubt about it.
He's an infectious personality.
Oh, absolutely. He's a people person. Cargo's a guy, he'll hit 110 if the team's winning. He's good with that.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's a we guy, not a me guy. So, but here again, organizations have to cultivate that leadership within, understand how that leadership impacts performance. And if you don't know what you don't know, be willing to raise your hand and say, how can you help us develop this? Because like I said, the top organizations in the world, and if you go over to the NFL side, Sandy, and you look at the top performing NFL teams, they're the teams that ask for help. The top performing college football team in the last 6-7 years is Alabama.
Sure.
They're the first ones to raise their hands for help. So being able to say, hey, you know what? We're not experts in this field. Help us with it. That's the key to development, the leadership within. The Rockies need that internal leadership, and I think they do have it, but it's got to be cultivated and developed from within.
Back to the point on leadership and followership, and you talked about leadership a lot. Followership, you've mentioned, too, as being important. You talk about big five approaches. What does that mean?
So there's five primary approaches to leadership that organizations use. And these top five are the ones that really have the most impact on performance. And if we use these five, they're the ones that organizations can lean on to help, you know, organizational performance, buy into roles, role acceptance, role adherence, and role performance. For example, I'll use a couple of them. Autocratic leadership means it's very structured and very disciplined. We see this in the military. We see this in correctional facilities. Charismatic leadership style, that's used in a lot of business contexts, a lot of performance. Here's what Google and Apple do that is so fascinating to me. They create a climate and culture where people on Sunday night say, I can't wait to get to work.
Right.
They have free childcare. They have food that's from 10 different restaurants. They really, the dress code is very relaxed as long as you get your work done. We've got to be better at that in professional sports, at cultivating how to develop climate and cultures where people will be the best they can be. And a big part of that is understanding that leadership, followership, interdependence. Because again, if your followers do not drink your Kool-Aid or do not consent, leadership has no meaning and value.
Yeah, and you mentioned followership empowerment.
Yes.
That seems like almost a contradiction.
Right.
If you're following, how are you empowered?
Because here's what great leaders do. They give power to the followers. They give them a voice. They help them believe that, you know what, that you have a pony in this race and you actually influence our performance every day. Let's liken this. Let's give an analogy to a family. An adolescent child. Adolescence defined between 10 and a half and 24 and a half. If that child in the family, an adolescent, believes they have a voice in the family, in other words, I'm valued in this family, that's going to be a healthy family system. But if that child feels like, you know what, I'm told what to do, I'm controlled, I'm over-controlled, and I really don't have a voice in this family, for example, where we're going on vacation, then that child is not going to perform at peak levels. The same thing with a team, Sandy, or an organization. We have to empower our followers. And the way we do that is we share power with them. We're not autocratic. We don't tell them what to do, how to do it. We give them a facility, an organization where they can exhibit leadership and be able to deploy what they have to make the good of the team better. And that's how that leadership, followership, interdependence helps performance, because everyone feels like they have a stake in the outcome of this organization.
I know this is speculative, and we've been talking about the Rockies, who are actually playing games, giving us a chance to make clear judgments or clearer judgments than we can about a team such as the Broncos, for example, who don't happen to be playing games right now and, in fact, are still almost a month away from the start of training camp. But you worked with Vance Joseph last year in Miami. How many of these principles does he absorb? And in the respects you've been identifying here, what kind of change can he affect within the Bronco culture or ecosystem, whatever you want to call it, for 2017?
Yeah.
Along the lines you've been talking.
Yeah. You know, that's a very good question. You know, Vance Joseph, as I call him VJ, he has all the hardware. Okay, he has all the things we're talking about in leadership and communication skills and all those things. The software is going to be where the question mark is. In other words, does he have a culture and a climate of assistants that are going to buy into what he really stipulates? I think they do. I really do. I think VJ is an infectious guy. He's what I would call a charismatic leader.
Right.
He may not be the best there's ever been in front of the media, but when he gets in front of his team or the position or the defense or the offense, he commands that room. And he's a guy where you can walk up to him, look him in the eye, and he's a real guy and you can talk to him. That's infectious on a team. So me looking forward, I look forward for VJ to having a great career. He'll have some hiccups. He'll have some bumps in the roads like everybody does. But I think he has the charisma abilities, the communication abilities and competencies to really influence coaches and players alike that will really build a climate and culture of belief.
Is that easier or harder to do when you're a head coach as opposed to a coordinator?
It's easier to do because you're kind of the CEO now. You can set the climate and culture. When you're a coordinator, you're kind of governing your side of the ball. When you're a position coach, you're governing that position. Now I get to be a CEO. Now I get to oversee my OC, my DC, position coaches, and let them know what I expect of them every day, what we expect in terms of a climate and culture, and how we can reach peak levels of performance. So I think now that he's in that quote-unquote CEO position, he's going to be able to deploy that in a more infectious manner.
At the risk of oversimplifying, and I'm taking the liberty of suggesting that I understand John Elway's thinking, but I've thought through the last 6 years that as a head coach, he liked what Gary Kubiak brought, but he preferred the model that involved John Fox as the head coach. Based on Vance Joseph and what you know of his assistants, do you maybe get the best of both worlds there, where you have sufficient technical expertise, but that CEO model as a head coach? Gary Kubiak's not a CEO head coach,
right,
by any means. He's calling the plays. He's involved in game planning in an intricate sense. But the model now is more in the manner that John prefers. Vance Joseph, younger than John Fox, maybe a better coaching staff around him to provide the technical expertise. Is this at least potentially the ideal situation when it comes to what Elway wants?
I think so, because Vance brings the quantitative abilities of being able to really scheme and set the tone in terms of where he wants the team to be personnel-wise, operationally. But he also brings that qualitative piece, the humanistic piece, where he connects with people. So I think he's a good mix of that, of those two models. And I think, you know, John, when he made his decision to hire VJ, there was a lot of things that went into that decision. So I think Vance is a guy that really is one of the young and up-and-comers, if you will, and I look forward to the Broncos having great success with
and
him.
And let's make that point crystal clear. For better or worse, despite what you may read about there being a real close competition for the head coaching job here between Vance Joseph and Kyle Shanahan, for example, again, for better or for worse, let's represent the situation as it developed. Vance Joseph was the first and really the only choice for John Elway.
Whether
it works out or not,
right?
It's revisionist history to suggest that, well, it was neck and neck and they just kind of flipped a coin and picked Vance.
No,
that's not true.
No, if you know John at all, and I know you do, he's very calculated. He's very systematic and very analytical. This was a decision made with a lot of thought, and it was a very clear decision.
And made right away.
Right away.
And we continue. Speaking of right away, we'll talk about some of the performance protocols and tie in something that I read the other day regarding analytics that, believe it or not, has some application, at least I think it does, unless the doctor shoots me down, for psychology and how analytics and psychology, while not necessarily related, are viewed in some major professional sports circles with equal amounts of skepticism and are equally valuable. Both are within the conduct of an organizational model. So we continue on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us. Talk a little bit about, before we continue, DK2 motivation.
Yeah, DK2 motivation performance is our organization. We have office here and one in Florida as well. We're off I-25 and Arapahoe Road. We help people, Sandy, perform at peak levels, all sports, all organization types. We work with people as young as 8 years old in gymnastics to retiring NFL players. So we work with the gamut. We train people's brains and neurofeedback and coaching. We coach their brains, have sensory deprivation tanks, biomats you lay on. We have a smoothie bar. Come by and have a smoothie on us off I-25 and Arapahoe Road. But the main thing, Sandy, is we help people be the best they can be. We approach performance from the mental perspective. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's broken. We're just going to help you get your mind right. Train the mind. The body will follow.
Let's get into performance protocols. I know we've talked about this many, many times, the forming, storming, norming, and performing, and how it applies and the differences, since we're primarily talking about baseball and football today, over 162 games as opposed to 16 games of a regular season in the NFL, at least.
Right. Yeah, you know, forming, storming, norming, and performing, that's a research and evidence-based model that's used in organizational performance. Again, all the top organizations in the world use this model, Sandy. And what it means is forming, it obviously means when an organization forms, but storming is the key one I want to touch upon,
yeah,
because a lot of organizations are afraid to storm. They think there's something wrong with kind of a dissent or people not always buying in. You know, I liken it to like a marriage. If you don't storm in your marriage, you'll never have true intimacy. You've got to storm. You've got to know that person at their worst so you'll know them at their best. The same thing with an organization or as a team. You got to be willing to go down that road and figure out, okay, who's our starters? You know, who's that kid at the end of the bench? Could he be helping us? You know, how often have you seen, Sandy, when someone gets hurt and then their backup comes in and plays really well and you're scratching your head and said, why didn't this kid get a chance before? You know, because some teams are afraid to storm and say, I'm going to put that young blood in here and see what he can do. The teams that are willing to storm are people like, you look at the New England Patriots. Almost every year they start out 2-3, 3-4, and people are writing them off. But then they get into that forming stage and then that performance stage, and they run off 7 or 8 straight. And they understand they want to be performing the best at the last quadrant. So the Rockies, I think in this case,
yes,
may have went leapfrogged, you know, the storming phase and got into the performing stage really early in the season before they had really figured out who they are and what they are. And by the way, Sandy, storming means finding out who your leaders are, who's willing to lead, who can lead, and cultivating that as well.
And that is something the Rockies have yet to do, as we explained earlier on. I want to get to this point because I'm reading Albert Breer in Sports Illustrated the other day on analytics, and he's talking to all kinds of people in the NFL. And there were 3 points that were made that I thought tie in to your business as well as analytics. First, the idea that you have to explain and communicate with coaches or managers, scouts, on their terms.
Ooh, I love it.
You've talked about that before.
Yes.
It has to be on their terms, not on your terms, because if it's on your terms, they'll push you away.
You have to meet followers where they're at, or else they're not going to drink your Kool-Aid. Leaders, the greatest leaders in the world, do not deploy their competencies and acumen at their level. It's at the levels of receivers of their message, and that's the followers. So, yes, meeting them at their level is essential to performance.
And the other, the goal is to make people more effective and efficient. That's true in analytics. That's true in your business.
Absolutely. We're looking for optimal performance. Again, if you train the mind, the body will follow. Too many people spend 99% training the body, and then, oh, by the way, let's learn how to focus. You hear coaches say this all the time. All right, let's focus. They clap their hands. Let's go. Let's focus. But they don't teach you how to focus. Let's get our head right. But they don't teach you how to get your head right. That's what we're in the business to do, to be very specific, is to get the head right, because as above, meaning the brain, is below the body.
And analytics can, in this piece, it's established, dramatically supplement the evaluation process. They're not replacing anything. And I think of your business in exactly the same way. It's a terrific supplemental tool. It's not a matter of a trade-off where you
right.
introduce what you do and completely move away or discard some other essential practice within the organization. You're adding on. You're not exchanging with.
Yeah. All we're doing is we're adding a spoke in the wheel, Sandy. We are not the wheel, but we are a spoke within the wheel. Analytics is a spoke within the wheel. You know, performance psychology is a spoke in the wheel. We don't want to change the wheel. It's already there. It's existed. We're going to enhance it. Train the mind, the body will follow.
And the simple precept, analytics, sports psychology, 95% common sense when you really think about it.
You know what? I am continually amazed when I sit down with clients and I explain to them our practices and protocols, and they look at me and said, you know what? This makes so much sense. I didn't trust this. I thought this on my own, but I didn't trust it. Now that you're explaining it to me in a very systematic way, this is truly who we were meant to be anyway. You know, I can't tell you how many players I've been around, high school, college, professional players, that are deploying 60 to 70% of who they're truly meant to be because they're not trusting the mental perspectives that they inherently feel they should be trusting. We get them to trust that. Because here's what it is, Sandy. When you walked out in your backyard as a kid and you were swinging that bat or throwing the pitch, you weren't nervous. You were having a great time. We teach players and athletes and performers to get that backyard freedom back out on the field when you're in front of 50,000 people. And when you're able to do that, Sandy, you can do anything. You can be the best preacher in the world, the best teacher, best firefighter, the best NFL quarterback, major league pitcher, or mom and dad. That's what we do, is help people get their mind in the right spot so they can deploy who they're truly meant to be. And when you do that and hit that sweet spot, Sandy, you love and you trust everybody. And when you're in that spot, brother, life is beautiful.
I've told you this before. You've been from the beginning a breath of fresh air on these programs. People love it when you're on. We get an overwhelmingly positive response, more so than with just about any other person we have on the airways with us. And we appreciate your time today. Know how busy you are between Florida and Colorado these days. And I love you, man.
Love you too, brother. And thank you for that compliment. And I want to say this, Andy. I'm only as good as I am because you provide a climate and culture that I can do that. And I love you too.
That's Rick Perea, the good doctor, making a house call for us during this first hour today. Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, in the second hour. We'll talk some baseball with Troy as well. And our fan Broncos insider, Cecil Lammy. That's all ahead, while we remind you that all of our conversations here can be heard by listening to Sandy Clef On Demand, courtesy of Coors Light at 1043thefan.com.